Welcome to the official PaizoCon 2019 seminar coverage presented by Paizo and New Direction Network. Today's seminar, the Paizo 2019 Preview Banquet. We would like to go ahead and apologize for the quality of sound early. There was some misfunction with the actual microphones in the seminar hall. We are unable to make any adjustments, and we've done what we can to make it enjoyable.
Woo, it works! Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 12th PaizoCon. Thank you guys so much for coming and making this weekend so special for the staff. We always look forward to hanging out with you guys, gaming, sharing our secrets, our visions, things like that. This is one of the shows that really energizes the staff and really gets us going into the summer. And we just love to be here, and we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys coming all the way. Some of you guys kind of local, some people from way far away, but we always appreciate the effort you guys take and then the fun you have here with us. So thank you so much for that. So I always take this opportunity because there's two people without whom we wouldn't be here either, and that is the founders of PaizoCon way back in 2008, Liz Kortz and Tim Nightingale. Stand up, Liz. Yeah, those guys showed us how much fun it is to hang out with you guys way back in 2008. They made PaizoCon without even telling us they were going to do it, and then invited us to come. And so we were the special guest at the first one, and we had so much darn fun. We said, hey, you know, can we do that next year? And we've been doing it ever since. So the banquet's always a special time too, because it's our time to kind of like have a little fun and show you guys things we haven't shown anybody else. It's like, you guys are like our besties, so you know we're gonna tell you our best secrets and stuff. So, without any further ado, I'm gonna introduce the man who is the keeper of the secrets, Mr. Eric Mona.
Hi, everybody. So I'm Eric Mona. I'm the publisher and chief creative officer of Paizo, and welcome to PaizoCon 2019. So happy to have you. Anybody recognize the goblin that I'm holding in the picture? It's the Cheddar Goblin from Mandy. Come on, guys. All right. We're not the only company with cool goblins. All right. So I've got a lot of stuff to go over tonight. I guess while I was sitting here about 10 minutes before the presentation going over things with Owen, I said that we have an F-load of slides, which is true. I just didn't know that the mic was live to the Twitch channel at the time. Woo! Yeah, it's quite raw here at PaizoCon. So we have an F-load of slides. All right. So the first slide, and perhaps the most important slide, is... here is the Paizo staff, everybody. Could I get the Paizo staff to stand up? Stand up! Oh my God. Yeah. You guys can sit down. Thank you so much. Every year, I'm like, these guys, I've worked harder than ever before. That was all bullshit. It's only true this year. So the staff has just been working incredibly, incredibly hard, not just, you know, on kind of the main topic of the presentation here, Pathfinder 2nd Edition, which is a thing, but also Starfinder, also getting the website going, sending out the packages that you guys order for your subscriptions, you know, running our Twitch channel. Everything that we've been doing is the result of the hard work from what I truly believe is the best staff in any tabletop gaming company of all time. So I want to specifically recognize a couple of groups. And so the first group that I want to specifically recognize are the members of the editorial staff, which starts with our game designers. I'm not going to name all of them. There's just the company's too big now, so sorry, guys. But the game design team, the editors, the developers, our project managers, our art directors, our graphic designers, our organized play people, these are the folks who have been at ground zero of making Pathfinder 2nd Edition, from the playtest to the final version, some of which you guys will be seeing tonight. So I would like to have a hand of applause for the editorial people, just for a second. Okay. All right, good. Excellent. Now there's one other group at Paizo that I would like to recognize, and that is everyone other than the editorial team. Because for the most part, a lot of their heavy lifting and hard work on Pathfinder 2nd Edition is yet to come. So good luck, guys. It's great. So thank you. How about a round of applause for everyone who's not editorial? All right, and since we are in a happy, clappy mode, I would like to recognize right now specifically a group of folks who, without whom maybe PaizoCon 1 would have started, thanks to Liz and Tim, but PaizoCon 12 would be an absolute disaster, and that is our operations team, and that is led by Jeffrey Alvarez, our director of operations. COO. Cool. He's cool, man. Also, Will Chase and Sarah Marie, who did all of the programming for the scheduling and the customer service and operations team. So all those guys, the operations team, were here setting this place up a day before any of the rest of us got here, and they will be the last ones to leave, tearing down the store and everything. So thank you so much. I gotta give it up for the organized play team as well. They have been the ones holding court in this room. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, the presentations are fun, the panels are fun, but people come to game cons to game, and the organized play folks have been making sure that happens from moment one to the final hour of the con, so thank you guys so much for that. The last group I'd like to recognize is any Paizo employee who feels slighted that I didn't say their name or that I forgot to mention, so I love you guys. All right, let's talk, yeah. People I forgot to mention! Woo! All right, okay, so moving on from the staff, I'd like to take a moment to talk about our guests of honor. We've got a couple of absolutely wonderful guests of honor this year, and that is our author guest of honor, Leanne Mercier. Leanne, where are you? Hello! Thank you, Leanne! Leanne has written a ton of great stuff for us. She did work on our Nadal book. She did a bunch of novels, some of my favorite novels in the entire Pathfinder Tales line. But one of the things I'm most excited about Leanne's contributions are actually things you guys don't even know about yet, the upcoming Pathfinder setting stuff, and it's really, really awesome. And we're going to be talking about some of that stuff later today. So we're really thrilled to have Leanne as our author guest of honor. We are also really, really, really thrilled to have Wayne Reynolds as our artist guest of honor. Wayne, are you here somewhere? All right. Thank you, Wayne. Wayne, of course, does all of the Pathfinder covers of our hardcover rule books. He's designed all of the iconic characters. Wayne literally knows something about every buckle and pocket and necklace and everything on these characters, and he loves talking about it. So he's in the store, and he can show you how deep the rabbit hole goes on every piece of equipment on these characters. And it's just been an honor of my creative career to work so closely with Wayne over the years. And Wayne, we're so thrilled to have you with us. Thank you for coming, buddy. Okay. Also, the Glass Cannon guys are here. They're our media guests this year. They're actually not here right now because they were kind enough to counter-program the banquet with an off-site show. So let's, enough said. Okay. No, they've been great. Jason's been running a game with them, a live play every day so far at the show. The conclusion is tomorrow morning at 11. It's insane. It's been super fun. I'm one of the players. I'm the worst player on the group. But it's been great. So thanks to Glass Cannon. And thanks to all the members of the Glass Cannon Nation who decided to come watch me talk instead of them. Both of you, I'm really honored that you're here. Okay. So also, we've got a ton of partners here. This slide shows a bunch of them. It doesn't show all of them. So I'd like to just take a quick moment to recognize. I'm not going to name everyone because, again, I'll forget one and people will be mad. You're either on this slide or you're not, but you're here and we love you. Thank you for coming to PaizoCon. One of the things that I want to make sure you've all had a chance to do before you check out of this place is to go to the Paizo.com store across the way. We've got way more stuff there than we even bring to Gen Con or anything. It makes it a lot easier when we just put it on a truck and cross the city. But you can really see a lot of our stuff there. But what's really, really cool about that is a number of our partners and friends have booths there as well. So I would encourage you, if you've not already done so, to see just like kind of the creativity at the heart of this community. Community that has, you know, that doesn't work for Paizo, because it's quite staggering, and we're really honored to have all of you here with us as well. Okay, I would like to bring up the first guest speaker, and although the discussion is pretty heavily focused on Pathfinder 2nd Edition, we still have other very important things as well, and we've got some really exciting stuff about the Starfinder line. And to talk about that, I'd like to welcome Starfinder Creative Director Rob McCreary to the podium.
All right, I'm really tall, so hopefully I can get in this mic. All right, let's talk about some Starfinder. Yeah. We got a lot of bugs coming up in the next year or so. Let's see, like bug, yeah, bug, bug, bug. Yeah, lots of bugs. We're really excited this year's PaizoCon to talk about the Beginner Box. This is out right now. It's a great way to introduce new players to Starfinder, and this is like a neutron star in a box. It's dense. I mean, it is full of stuff. It's great. There's a Hero's Handbook for players with character creation and a solo adventure. We got a GM's book with an adventure, monsters, how to create your own stuff, pre-gens, blank character sheets, flip mat, pawns, dice, everything to get you started in Starfinder. And we're running it at the Delve at the show, so just out there between here and the store all weekend, come and play the Starfinder Beginner Box Delve. It is pretty cool. Next up, we have the Attack of the Swarm Adventure Path. Exclamation point included. Lots of exclamation points, free of charge. This is our next monthly adventure path. 6 volumes, starts in August, takes you from 1st to 13th level. So this adventure path, you're going to battle the Swarm. This is one of the big major galactic threats in Starfinder, and they're this sort of locust-like collective of insectile aliens. And you need to prevent them from consuming everything in their path. Would you like to know more? Join the Suskalon Defense Force and fight to defend your home, the planet of Suskalon in the Vast, from the overwhelming Swarm menace. Outnumbered and outgunned, the brave soldiers of the 5th Battalion lay down their lives so the civilian population can evacuate the planet. Good shot, Obaziah! That's giving the Swarm what for? You're going to want to put on your bug stomping boots for this adventure path, because we got some scary new swarmies to face. Like this little guy, the Swarm Revulsor. Like, he's so cute. Look at him. These guys don't know when to quit. You're probably going to want to leave your disintegrator at home, because they are totally immune to that. And maybe pick up a plasma rifle, because they're just going to regenerate everything otherwise. Also, pack some headphones, because they've got a screech that'll shatter your eardrums. So this is just one of the new swarm creatures that's appearing in the adventure path. and the Swarm attacks in August. Also in August, we have Alien Archive 3. That's our third Alien Archive. Full of new alien creatures, new playable races. We got some cool new gear and rules options, and creature companions. So let's see some of the new things we're going to see in Alien Archive 3. Perhaps the giant space tardigrade. You're probably familiar with the microscopic water bear, as they're known, but this is giant and lives in space. This takes on starships, and that's its own internal plasma cannon that it's firing right there. And if you kill one of these, you can use its dead body as a submarine. True story, the rules are in there for it. All right, who here is a fan of Skittermanders? Well, I'm sorry, because we have these guys, the Stridermanders. They're also from Vesk 3. You can see they've got the eight limbs. They've got that feeding tendril. They're evolutionary cousins of the Skittermanders, but they're the predators, and the Skittermanders are the prey. Maybe you'd like to play an insect, but the Sheeran aren't quite bug-like enough for you. So here you can play a sapient bug swarm called the Spathinae. You'll find it's much harder to be stepped on when you can make yourself into a humanoid form. And maybe bugs aren't your thing. That's cool. We've got something for everybody, including Technicolor Space Walruses. Starfinder Society players will recognize the Morlama. Those of you that don't recognize them, they like music, they like dance, and they like waiting in line. So they seem like the perfect audience for line dancing. Just don't break their achy breaky hearts, please. I mentioned earlier we've got creature companion rules. So for creature companions, pets, and mounts, from laser wolves to shotalashus, or this guy, the Yasakaya. You know, there's nothing quite like striking fear into the hearts of your enemies when you ride a four-eyed bug weasel from Castrovel into combat. So you can do that now with Alien Archive. That's coming out in August, but we're super excited for November when the Character Operations Manual hits. I want to give a shout out now to everyone that helped us in the public playtest at the end of last year, the beginning of this year. We put the three new classes out there, opened them up. We really took your feedback to heart. So everyone that answered the surveys, gave us your feedback, thank you so much. We're really pleased with what we've come up with after the playtest. So we're going to have these three new character classes. We've got new themes and archetypes, things like the Noble Scion and the Powered Armor Jockey. We've got new alternate racial abilities for core and legacy races. One of those is the Xenometric Android, which can emulate lots of other races besides just humans. So you want your Gnome Android or your Vesk Android or your Soki Android, you're going to be able to do that. We've also got two new Starship combat roles in the Character Operations Manual, including the Magic Officer, which uses mysticism in Starship combat. So, you know, who needs a science officer when you've got magic? So we play-tested three new classes, and I'm really excited to show off the first look at the new iconic characters from the Character Operations Manual. We don't have all the details down yet, but I can show you our iconic biohacker. She is a Kasatha, and for those of you who know, the biohacker is the sort of unquestioned adept at chemistry and medicine and even stranger catalysts, and they use their biohacks to augment their allies and enfeeble their enemies and really push the limits of cutting-edge bioscience. You might also notice that she seems to love Niels. Ouch. We got some good feedback on the playtest on this. One of the things is, you know, you want to help your allies. That means you got to shoot them with your injection weapon, but you don't want to miss your allies when you're shooting with your injection weapon. So we fixed that after the playtest. It's going to be a lot easier to hit your allies with all your needles. Here is the iconic Vanguard. He is a Karasha Lashunta. The Vanguard is a warrior with the sort of mystic control over the power of entropy. This is some words from Owen Casey Stevens here, a juggernaut of entropic destruction. These guys are in the front line of battle and really excel in melee combat. This guy particularly likes shields, And that's something we also learned from the playtest, is we redesigned their core ability, the Entropic Strike, to allow them to use it with shields of any item level. So they're going to be good from levels 1 through 20. And our third iconic is the Witch Warper. He's a human. The Witch Warper is a spellcaster that can really pull on the infinite variations of alternate realities to change the environment around them and pull magic effects into existence. You're like, why do I need an alternate reality? Well, they might have a better finale to the Game of Thrones than that alternate reality, so. In any case, you're going to be able to upgrade all of your characters' operations coming in November. And we've got one more thing to announce here. This is the Threefold Conspiracy Adventure Path. You're going to want to get out your tinfoil hats for this one, because the unseen are everywhere. We're talking greys, we're talking reptoids, all sorts of other invisible alien menaces. They've infiltrated all levels of Pact World society, and the unseen is just a conspiracy theory. They do not exist. There is no danger. Please go about your daily business. That is all. I kind of lost my place there. This is a monthly adventure path. It's 6 volumes, takes you to 13th level, and this is going to run from February to July of 2020. So look forward to that at the beginning of next year. And let's come back to Eric, our publisher.
Rob, that was awesome. Thank you so much. I think maybe the Game of Thrones thing was too soon. All right, cool. So it is now time to shift into the Pathfinder section of the preview banquet. And this next F-load of slides is got a lot of secrets in it. And as a GM of some experience, I have one really good way of protecting my GM secrets. So I'm just going to take the second edition GM screen here and kind of just put that there so none of you guys prying eyes can reveal my secrets. What do you know? I critted. Okay. So as you can see, this thing is pretty sweet. This is the actual printed copy of our GM screen for second edition. It's got this sweet, sweet art on this side, and it's got a bunch of helpful charts on the back, of course. So I'm just going to keep reading those to myself during the presentation. Don't mind me. Lovely, lovely. Okay, here is a lineup of characters from some upcoming books in the Pathfinder line. Jason Bowman's going to be up here in not too terribly long to go through a really deep dive on the core rule book and on the bestiary and on some of the other products. But I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about another group of products that are associated with Pathfinder 2nd Edition. And let's start with the one that we've already announced and talked about. And that is the Lost Omens World Guide. So this thing comes out with the launch products for second edition. This is a 136-page overview of the Inner Sea region in the Age of Lost Omens, which is to say in the modern era of our campaign setting. So many of you know that the last couple digits of the year in our fake world correspond to the last couple of digits in the world of our real world. And so this product will be coming out in 2019. That makes it set in 4719. And so what's been happening in 4719? The last time we did a hardcover version of our campaign setting, I believe the current year was about 2009, 2010. So it's been a long time since we've checked in with a lot of these places. And throughout first edition, the philosophy for our campaign setting as it regards to the adventure paths is we didn't really want to say, okay, that's already happened, because we wanted the chance for all the players to play all the adventure paths. And so we didn't want to say, oh, this fake NPC killed Karzug, for example. Let's say if there's an AP where you fight a guy called Karzug, and for instance, and spoilers, and so we wanted that to be your table and your group. And so we'd been sort of reticent to say officially, like, okay, this adventure took place in this year, what have you. And so one of the opportunities that we have with the new edition is we're going to represent the campaign setting, and we didn't want to go through and be like, okay, remember all the witches now, because witches aren't in the core rulebook. They're all dead. You know, we didn't want to make some kind of bizarre, like, massive change to the campaign setting. So instead what we did is we decided to sort of canonize the changes that we've been doing all along through the adventure paths. So what you're going to see in 4719's Lost Omens World Guide is a world that is fundamentally shaped by the events in Pathfinder Adventures and Pathfinder Adventure Paths. I'll get a little deeper into that for a moment, but let's take a moment to take a gander at the beautiful work that our art team has put into the way this book looks. Something important about this book, and this will appear in the core rulebook in a very abbreviated form, because we've got a short chapter about the Lost Omens campaign world in that book. We have taken the 49, 50-some nations in our campaign world and broken them down into 10 geographically contiguous and thematically similar lands and realms. Each one of those has 5 or 6 different countries in it, and it's just a different way to look at the world. But there is one sort of mega outlier on that, and that is the city of Absalom, the city at the center of the world. That is the main city of our campaign setting. That is the home base of the Pathfinder Society and the site of many, many, many Pathfinder Society scenarios and adventures that we've done. But we have not had a chance to really revisit it in a major way for quite some time. And so we knew that it needed to be its own region. It's the biggest city in the world, or the biggest city in this part of the world, and certainly the most influential. And so it gets its own chapter in this book. And one of the things that I'm super stoked about, other than the patience of the editors who waited on my manuscript for this chapter, is we're going deep on the island itself. So Absalom sits on the Isle of Kortos. This book will reveal that Kortos is the ancient Aslanti word for starstone, and so it's also sometimes known as the Starstone Isle. This is the island that the living god Aridin raised from the depths of the sea when he brought the starstone up and interacted with it to become a living god. And for a long, long time, if you're really familiar with the setting or played a bunch of these a bunch of the Pathfinder Society adventures, you know that this giant island that's like miles and miles and miles and miles across basically has like 2 towns on it, which is lame. So we put a whole bunch more detail into it, and there's a ton of different places to adventure. And this is just kind of a good glimpse at the opening spread for each one of these 10 regions. So each one of these gets a detailed map. Each one of them has this really cool thematic illustration across the top, you know, and information on what religions are worshipped there, on some of their trade goods, stuff like that, before we get into the campaign setting proper. I don't have any slides to show what an actual pages from the background and the historical section of these chapters look like, but I do have a pretty awesome final spread of this chapter, and it shows you what some of the rules elements in this book are going to be. So for each of these 10 regions, you're going to receive roughly a page of about 7 to 10 backgrounds that are catered specifically to the region in question. And so these go a little bit more deep into the opportunities provided by the cultures and the themes of these regions. The core rulebook ones are like, you know, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, and tavern guy. But these ones are much like deeper into it. So there's some fun stuff in there that's pulled from the world itself. I'll let you guys take camera photo pictures of this or look on it online and you can read all of it, and spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. There's some fun stuff on here, if I do say so myself. And there are 9 other chapters in here that have other cool stuff. This one's got the Pathfinder agent archetype, as well as all of the backgrounds. Okay, this is what I'm talking about when I say that we've broken down the map into 10 different regions. So you see you've got a bunch of different ones. You can get a sense of like which nations go with which. Some of them make a ton of sense. Some of them are provided as sort of outliers. So for example, there's the Shining Kingdoms, which is like Andoran and Tal'Dor, and a lot of sort of like mainline, almost like you could sort of say good guy kingdoms or sort of straight fantasy kingdoms. But then you've got Galt in there, which is this ruined, failed state that's been under revolution for years and years and years. And so that's kind of like what happens to a fun fantasy kingdom when it completely goes to hell. As part of this mapping process and part of the fresh look that we're taking at the world, we've been able to do a really fun thing. The next thing I'm going to show you is not in the book, and you'll see why it's not in the book in just a second. We did show it off on one of the streams a few weeks ago, but I think it's so cool I just wanted to show you guys. Look at that. So that is the entire planet of Galarian. James Jacobs put this thing together. The first version of this, he actually like drew on a beach ball. We found this cool program to map it onto a rotating globe. So that is what it looks like, guys. And that thing right there, that little circle up there, that's about to go away. That's the inner sea. It's like as big as like, it's tiny compared to all this other stuff. So it's a huge world, and we're going to explore a lot of it in the coming years together. So let's talk about some stuff you don't already know. This is the next unannounced book. This is the Lost Omens character guide. This is going to be the second, This is going to be the second book in the Lost Omens World Guide series. These things are going to come out about quarterly. Most of them are going to be 128 pages, 136 pages in there. Every once in a while, we're going to do a real big, giant book. This is one of the kind of main ones. So this is a 136-page guide to really get the most out of rooting your character into the setting. The Lost Omens World Guide gives some backgrounds, gives some archetypes. The Lost Omens character guide gives you ways to dive deep into your character's ancestry. There are new heritages and ancestry feats for every single core rulebook ancestry. So you might be playing an elf out of the core rulebook, but maybe you want to play an Akuja elf from the Mwangi Expanse, or maybe you want to play a Snowcaster elf from the Northlands. This is the book that's going to show you how to do that. It's going to give you some cultural stuff that's going to help you with your role-playing, but it's going to give you some mechanical hooks as well in the form of ancestry feats and heritages that will really allow you to continue to customize your game. Oh, and we're doing some new ancestries as well. We're going to introduce some ones that we've never done before, and there's actually an error on this slide. It says bugbear, which would be hilarious, but it's actually hobgoblin. So, sorry. There's a hobgoblin right there on the right. Then we've got leshies, which are these little plant guys on the left. And we also have lizard folk. So those of you guys who are listening to Jason's amazing Oblivion Oath stream that we do every Thursday on officialpaizo.twitch.tv, our official Paizo channel, know that our project manager Gabe has got an amazing, amazing lizard folk character, and he's using some of the rules that we're going to put in this book, so you'll be able to play him as well. So we're going to do some really cool things. Why hobgoblins? Well, they're fun. They're like tall goblins. But also, they played a major role in one of our adventure paths. And there is actually a hobgoblin, very small, but a hobgoblin nation in the middle of the inner sea now, thanks to the events of the adventure path. I don't want to spoil it. So they're a bigger part of it. Leshies, we introduced a few years ago as monsters, and like half of our staff and many of our fans just were like, oh, we love those guys. So we thought that'd be hilarious to do as a race. And lizard folk are an ancestry we've wanted to do some more stuff with for a long, long time. Now, I can hear what you're thinking, you guys. You're like, that's cool. But what about tieflings? What about rat folk? What about like the ones we really super want? Yeah, we're going to do those eventually too. Soon. But I'm not announcing that book yet. But if you're like, I got a list of 12 monsters that I'd rather have ancestries for than leshies, yeah, we're going to do them too. Don't worry about it. Trust me. Okay, and then this book also has 5 complete factions with archetypes and other benefits of membership. So if you want to be a Pathfinder Society agent, you want to be a Hell Knight, you want to be a member of other organizations, we've picked 5 of the ones we like the best, 5 of the ones that are really thematically appropriate to the new normal in the campaign setting. We put them in this book. Another cool thing that's in this book are templates that you can apply to monsters to make them appropriate creatures for, let's say, you want to have like a Nessian hellhound, but you want to be like a particularly hell knighty version. Well, we're going to give you some cool little tricks you can play to apply templates to that stuff to make that work. Also, each of these factions are going to have a few NPCs in this book as well that you can use as allies, or if you're a GM, that you can use to populate the denizens of your Lost Omens campaign. Let's take another look at these weirdos. So this is a leshy. That is a dwarf. The person in the middle is a Thassalonian from New Thassalon. New Thassalon... let's just say when the Rune Lords return to the Rune Lords, they bring some landscape with them. And these are sort of time-displaced Thassalonians in the modern era. And so you'll have an opportunity to play those guys as well. Coming out in January of 2020 is the third volume in these Lost Omens world guides, and that is Lost Omens Gods and Magic. This is not the official cover. This is a mock-up, so it won't look exactly like this. this when it comes out, but the details are a bunch of stuff on the gods of the Age of Lost Omens. It's going to have an exhaustive index with hundreds of deities, with domains, favored weapons, and all the stuff you need to play those characters, updated to the second edition rules. It's going to have new domains. It's going to have new feats that are specific to different faiths. It's going to have spells to customize your character based on their faith, and so on. So this is not just a book for clerics and champions and druids. This is a book for everybody. So if you're a fighter and you worship, let's say, Caden Kalian, there should be some cool stuff in here for you as well. So that is Lost Omens, Gods of Magic. That comes out January 2020. Let's talk about the first adventure path for second edition, and that is the Age of Ashes adventure path. That starts, it says July, it's really August 1st, and so it comes out at the same time as everything else in our launch slate, so you can get your core rulebook, you can get your bestiary, and you can get your first volume of the Age of Ashes adventure path as well. So the Age of Ashes adventure path is a very cool fantasy campaign wherein you guys are growing up in a town that is not too far away from an abandoned Hell Knight fortress in Isgur, and you go check that out, and you eventually find a series of portals and ancient gates that will take you to all corners of the Inner Sea and beyond. And as you travel to those places through this ancient gate, you start to unravel a mysterious conspiracy that involves the evil draconic god Dayhawk. It involves folks who are trying to enslave a whole bunch of the populace, and so a lot of this is like freeing slaves and fighting against tyranny. And there is a bad guy who is behind the whole thing, and I'm not going to tell you who it is, but holy moly, it's going to melt a lot of faces when it happens. So there is a known bad guy behind this whole thing, and maybe you'll get to kill him, maybe you'll get to convince him he's wrong, or maybe you're just going to get breathed on. Okay, that'll run through December. So we're going to double up the adventure path in July, August. So the last adventure path for first edition will come out pretty much the same time as the first adventure path for second edition. One of the reasons we're doing that is it helps us get all of the, you get two full adventure paths in one calendar year. So it's been just kind of weird that it's like, and then it ends in January. So we're going to shift that up, and we're also going to be starting Starfinder adventure paths in different months than Pathfinder adventure paths. So we have different options depending on what game you're playing through throughout the year. Next thing I want to talk about is the second Pathfinder adventure path that we have not announced yet, and that is the Extinction Curse adventure path. Now, this thing is brand new, so we don't have a lot of art for it. So you're like, what is that tower? What's the deal with that? And what that is it ties into what I was talking about with the Isle of Kortos and the Starstone Isle. So this entire adventure path takes place on the Isle of Kortos as you, the members of a traveling circus, go from place to place and explore the island. And one of the things that's happening on the island right now is back when Aridin raised this, essentially the seabed to the surface when he raised the Starstone from the depths of the Inner Sea to become a living god, he realized that if he was going to attract a cult and eventually a city to his island, they were going to need to eat something more than the dried seaweed that came up with the ocean bottom. So he went and said, you know what I could really use is some method by which to artificially increase the fecundity of the landscape here. And so he looked around and he's like, well, okay, cool. There's this cavern in the depths of Orv in the Darklands, and they've got these magical gems, and they're a troglodyte society that seems to use those to grow food and stuff, and since they're monsters, I guess we'll just take them. And so he stole all those things and brought them up to the island. They call them Aeon Towers, and they're these giant crystals that are on top of these towers, and they help to make the farmlands and the forests grow healthy, and now the troglodytes are pissed off and they want him back. So they're going to try and steal that stuff back. They're going to try to sink the Isle of Kortos and destroy all life upon it. And the only ones standing between them are a bunch of clowns and jugglers and trapeze artists and fortune tellers. And it's going to be awesome. So this is going to be a nice tour of the Isle of Kortos. Yeah, give it up for jugglers. All right, so that is a quick glimpse at the GM screen. That's a quick glimpse at the Lost Omens World Guides going into January of 2020, and a quick glimpse at our next two Pathfinder adventure paths. Now, before we get into the meat of the core rulebook and the bestiary, I'd like to invite Tanya Woldridge to come up to talk a little bit about what's coming up with Pathfinder Society Organized Play.
Thank This is a squeet screen. I haven't gotten to see it yet. So, Starfinder Society, we are... Come on, you could do a little bit better than that. That was weak. Thank you. We are 22 months into year one. But it is time to take a pivot and move on. We've been in the Scoured Stars for a while. We announced via blog a little bit ago, because we had to get the products out to Origins and to some of our conventions, that this year was going to be the year of 1,000 bytes. At Origins, we will launch 200, Fate of the Scoured God, which wraps up those 22 months of Scoured Stars storylines and kind of gives us a pivot into what we're calling year two. Yes, not quite year two. We're bringing the story back to the Pact Worlds. We've done a lot of get out there and explore. Now we're coming back and saying, what does it mean to be a Starfinder agent, and what are some of the impacts of things that we've done over the last 22 months? This also brings up something that the team has put together that we felt it needed to be a player-driven community campaign. So those of you may have seen another blog that referenced the Second Seekers. We are wrapping up the stories. We've got a couple of Second Seekers that are finishing their bits, and we are going into introducing who could be the next one. It is the plans for the Starfinder Society. They're generated by our Second Seekers. We've asked our player base, who've achieved a certain reputation, to send us information about their characters. We've vetted that. We're doing a few processes on the back end, and we are going to introduce our choices to you in 207 at the end of September, where you will get to meet the candidates, you will get to hear their platforms, and we will put up a poll shortly thereafter. You will get to choose, Starfinders, who your next First Seeker will be. Yeah. So we are doing player-driven campaigns on this one, and our team is really excited to see how it turns out. All right, new reveal. Our society logo going into second edition. We're reflecting some of the changes that we're doing in the campaign by bringing the Sigil of the Open Road, what we've kind of had as our Grand Lodge faction symbol for years, back into our society logo. Everyone is Grand Lodge now. We are bringing back our core values of explore, report, cooperate. And our first season is the Year of the Open Road. Again, coming back to the basics. We want this campaign to be as accessible to new players as it is to our established player base. So one of the things we're looking at is those first Pathfinder Chronicles and some of the big names that we've read about, but we've never really delved into their history. Dervin Guest, Selmius Foster, Gregorio Barvath, and a few others that may have fallen by the wayside that we will reintroduce this year. And our third one is the Pathfinder Adventure Card Society, formerly known as the Pathfinder Society Adventure Card Guild. They used to be wrapped together, the two Pathfinder societies, the role-playing and the card, and we were not able to tell all the stories we wanted to and to give the kind of focus on this that we wanted to. So we made it the third prong of the organized play program. If we have two, why not have three? So we brought it in, and we gave it a developer, and we really put a lot of attention to it, and it is getting its own year of rotting ruin. And through the Card Society, we're going to tell what happens after the Siege of Gallowspire, after Tyrant's Grasp, after the passing of the torch. What are the storylines looking as this world is shifted in the map that Eric just showed you? And what are the ramifications of all of these APs and storylines on the Card Society? So if three different storylines, three different places to view Galarian now and in the future, Lots of organized play. We will be everywhere, yes. So for those of you that I've gotten to talk to this weekend, thank you. For those of you that want to play games, we will have space. We will find you a table. But for now, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Selinger to talk a little bit more about Adventure Card Game. Thank you.
I brought props. You just like Carrot Top. That's correct. Hi, I'm Mike Selinker. Nice to see y'all. So I've been taking notes because every time I come to PaizoCon, I try to get a sense of what the audience really wants to see developed in future products. Helps me get a real grounding. So what I understand is that you want to be able to shoot your friends with needles better. And you all want to be jugglers. Do I have that right? Okay. Vic, that's our next adventure path then. Needle shooting jugglers. Got it. Lisa just wants to cut it down to needle juggling, just so you know. All right. We got it figured out. Okay. Normally I come up here and I tell you about something that's going to be like 16 months away because it takes us forever to get anything done, right? But we actually had our stuff debut at PaizoCon, which is kind of awesome, like for the first time that's ever happened. So I get to actually sort of show it off, which is great. For those of you who, start out with Pathfinder Adventure Card Game when it was Rise of the Rune Lords, and then saw us do a bunch of other things, maybe fell off a little bit, decided to go on to something else. You're going to see some things that are a little bit different tonight. The cool part is that when you get done with this and you get over the hangover that you've got in the morning, you can go and play this right here, right now, with everybody who's got their sets. And it's pretty cool to be able to just go and try it out. So we'd like you to do so and tell us what you think, because we have about 2 months to get it right for Gen Con when we launch everything that Tanya just told you about. And so we'd like to be pretty strong about that. So let me just show you the most obvious thing, which is we made this. So this is the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game Core Set. It is gorgeous. And it's upside down. That's okay. You can play it upside down. This literally is, by the way, yesterday was the first time I'd ever seen it. So I'm sitting there fawning over it, like, haven't you ever played this before? Yeah, I've played it. But it's pretty cool. We decided to take the idea that we wanted to stop giving you long swords and cure spells in every set. So instead, we're giving it to you once. You only get one longsword ever. And so there's a lot going on in here. There's a adventure path based on the Dragon's Demand, which is one of my favorite adventures that Paizo has ever put out, because it's an adventure path where everybody thinks they're doing the right thing and they're all wrong. And so I encourage you to try it out. It's really, it's the same game, but it's pretty different. We basically took a year to listen to people and find out what it was they really loved about the game, but also what it was that was kind of stopping them from loving the game at various points along their path. And we fixed all that, because that's the kind of people we are. So we encourage you to try it out here. Let us know what you think. We put out in the same month, because we're masochists, an adventure path for this. Now, what I mean by that is normally, let me show you what this time, right side up. This is an adventure path box. This is something that you guys have all seen. If you drop it from a great height, you can kill a cat with it without any problem. This is the kind of thing we got used to making. I mean, every time we would say, let's make a new product, it was this. Like, this can be pretty intimidating, right? You got to get your team together. Got to say, we're going to make something that fits in a giant box. Got to go to the art directors and say, I need wider art than you normally make. And so we got used to making this. But this week, from now on, in fact, This is an adventure path. I don't have to worry about this tipping over in my hand when I lift it over my head like I'm doing now. An adventure path now is just a box that of cards that folds into your core set when you're done with it. You don't want it anymore, take it out, put another box in. We have to make more of these. But this one's called Curse of the Crimson Throne. Have you guys ever heard of that? So Curse of the Crimson Throne was what I said when we made Rise of the Rune Lords would be the second adventure path for the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. I was wrong. By a lot, by like 5 years. And I brought in Keith Richmond, who's sitting over there. There's Keith, waving his hand. Newly crowned president of Lone Shark Games, by the way. I brought in Keith because he'd run the RPG version of Curse of the Crimson Throne 3 times. And I was like, great, we're going to do that next. And he hasn't gotten to do it for 4 years. So, but now it's done and it's awesome. It's my favorite adventure path we've ever done. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but the first real Pathfinder product I ever worked on was a little thing called the Harrow Deck. See a blog about that coming up soon, but... the Pathfinder team came to me and said, Mike, do you know how to design a tarot deck? And I was like, gimme that. And made what I thought with Jason Bowman and a few other great contributors, made what I thought was a really cool thing. And then, you know, it finally got to be, so there's a full Harrow deck in here too. So you can do all your divination, all the stuff that you want to do. If you're playing an RPG campaign, you can use this for that purpose as well. So I think you'll like it. The game has gone through a few eensy-weensy changes. It looks like this now. So sometimes after 5 years, you just get tired of looking at the same old cards. And that happened to... Sarah and Sonia about 4 years ago. I was like, no, go nuts. Make a better looking, cooler, awesomer card. These are three of the promo cards from Curse of the Crimson Throne. They're coming out as a little set by themselves later on. But as you can see, the game looks very different now. I think it looks like it was made in this year, as you can see by like looking at other card games that have come out recently. And also it just looks vastly, vastly cooler. And so like I said, if you haven't had a chance to play for a while, I hope you'll give this a try. If you would like to do that on free RPG day, I encourage you to be these goblins. These are, you know, I find the principle behind this one a bit insulting, actually. These are the first goblins that consider themselves heroes, according to the canon. I don't believe that to be true. I believe all goblins consider themselves to be heroes. These are the first that we might certify as heroes. They have normal character classes, and they have a lot of positive, forward-thinking attitudes that might be good for the community. One of them has a wolf named Mitzi, who is, of course, not a giant poodle in any way whatsoever. This is a cool thing that we can do now. This is not like a promo card deck or anything like that. This is an actual storybook that we can release. We can now make with the core set, assuming you have it, we can make adventures paths of any size. Adventure path no longer means 6 boxes to us. It means whatever we want it to mean. And so anytime somebody comes up with a cool idea for a story path for us, we can make it, and we hope we can make a lot more of these. So pick this up. It's free on Free RPG Day. That's why they call it that. But you can also get it for less than free. No, that's the other direction. More than free off of Paizo.com later on. So that's what's coming up. I don't have any, like, I keep getting asked, what's our next adventure path? It'll come. It'll happen. But I hope you like this. And as I said, this is all here now. Come play it with us. We'll be around all weekend. Thanks a lot. and then this handsome man.
All right, the truth is I only have so many pictures of myself. So I hope you like this one. That's my rookie card. It's not worth anything. Okay, I'm still trying to get the image of Mike Salinka crushing cats out of my head. I hope it's harder to do with that Crimson Throne box. You monster. Okay. One quick thing I wanted to mention. In front of each of your place settings is a special commemorative pint glass for Pathfinder 2nd Edition with the Pathfinder logo on it. And inside that or near that is a little metal coin produced by our friends from Campaign Coins. And that is your very first 2nd Edition hero point. You all have been great players this weekend. You deserve a hero point. So that is yours. The glass and the hero point are yours to take home. So we appreciate you coming to the show and wanted to send you home with some fun goodies. You'll see that on the one of the sides of that Hero Point token is our friend Fumbus, the iconic goblin alchemist for 2nd Edition. And he's just a cute little bugger. And you can use that to maybe stabilize yourself from dying or reroll a roll, or perhaps you can try to jam it into a video game and see what happens. Speaking of video games, well, I didn't even mean to do that transition, but here we are. Look, it's the Kingmaker video game. Hello! So Kingmaker launched from our partners at Owlcat last year and has been a tremendously successful and I think really, really fun and cool and exciting take on one of our most popular adventure paths of all time. And right as we were prepping this presentation for PaizoCon, they made a couple of fun announcements that I wanted to recap here quickly. The first is the Kingmaker Enhanced Edition, and that is coming out June 6th, 2019. Now, if you already own the game, I guess this is just like an upgrade to what you already own with a bunch of quality of life improvements and a bunch of other fun stuff, including a brand new class, the Slayer. It's going to be a little while till that guy shows up in 2nd Edition, so enjoy him in the video game. And at the same time as they're doing the Kingmaker Enhanced Edition, they're also releasing a new DLC, which is the Beneath the Stolen Lands DLC. This is like a giant dungeon exploration sort of module for the Kingmaker campaign. My understanding is that you can plug it into the normal flow of the campaign, or you can just kind of start delving with a custom-made group of heroes. So you really can go in and make the kind of party you want, run them up against a really nasty dungeon, and just slay to your heart's content. Slay, 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 slay. So that's coming out June 6th at the same time. So if you're into that and you're playing the Kingmaker video game, we've got a new DLC coming for you. So I hope you all give that a try. Speaking of new fun Kingmaker stuff, we're making like 100 books about it. So we got a big crowdfunding campaign going on right now on Game On Tabletop. So you can go to gameontabletop.com and check out the festivities. I took this screenshot a couple days ago. We actually, I guess, just crested 300,000 bucks on that thing, which unlocked a bunch of more fun stuff. So we got Knock Knock, everyone. Oh my God, you guys remember Knock Knock. So that's very cool. New Goblin Companion that's been added to it. One of the things I'd like to mention specifically is this is got a big 2nd Edition campaign book for Kingmaker, but we also have some other books and options for people who maybe aren't playing 2nd Edition. So we're going to do a 1st Edition Kingmaker Bestiary that updates the stat blocks and the monsters from the new stuff and the old stuff as well into its own little book. So we're not doing a full 1st Edition Pathfinder compilation of Kingmaker, but we are doing a companion volume that you'll be able to run kind of both side by side. And we're also doing that for another little game called, I guess, 5e is what it's called. So if you like that, we'll have that for you as well. The campaign continues with all kinds of exciting unlocks. Our friends at Legendary Games are helping us with all this conversion. So that's Jason Nelson, Rachel Ventura. They are... Legendary is one of our absolute favorite partners and one of our favorite third-party publishers, and they're also good friends of ours as well, so we're totally confident that they're going to help us to make these things super kick-ass, and we're not done figuring out how big they are. That's really up to you guys. We've got, I think, about 12 days left in the campaign. If any of this interests you at all, I'd encourage you to go check out Game On Tabletop. One of the things we've heard from a lot of people, so part of the add-ons and the different content, there's a whole companion book with a bunch of companions that you can add with side quests and all that. A lot of the inspiration for that material is coming from the additions that Owlcat added to the story through their computer game. And that's super awesome. It's really cool to get like Knock Knock and Octavia and some of these other companions into the game. But we've been getting some requests and people are saying, okay, that's cool, but how about some like brand new original content? It's cool to get updated Owlcat stuff and it's cool to get the whole campaign updated to second edition, but let's get some additional content that's brand new. Okay, so for the $400,000 thing, which will pop the main book to 640 pages, we're going to add an entire new dungeon. This is going to be completely original. It's not from the computer game or anything. It's the Candlemere dungeon. Those of you who played Kingmaker know that this is a location that gets, let's call it medium shrift. We just didn't have the space for it. So we will be doing a full-on dungeon, a brand new dungeon in the Kingmaker game. That's at 400K. We got a lot more plans beyond that. So if you guys have the appetite for it, we will find a way to make it happen. I am about to move on and introduce the man of the hour, Mr. Jason Bullman, our lead designer, but I'm not there yet. Before we do that, I'd like to take a moment to recognize a couple of other folks. We've got our friends from No Direction helping us run the stream. So I'd like to recognize Ryan and Param from No Direction. No Direction has been the premier Pathfinder fan podcast since before most of us even knew what the word podcast meant. So we're thrilled to have both of them here helping us out with the audiovisual stuff. So great to have you guys along for the journey every year, but especially pleased to have you guys with us here this year. Lastly, I would really like us all to recognize the hard work that the staff here at the DoubleTree Hotel has put into making this such a wonderful banquet and making it such an accommodating location for our convention. So thank you. Thanks especially to the DoubleTree employee who's responsible for giving us all alcohol. So you, sir, thank you. Really, really appreciate that. I'm not sure I've ever met a person who appreciates alcohol as much as Jason Bullman. So I'd like, without further ado, to invite our director of game design, Jason Bullman, to give us a tour of the brand new Pathfinder core rules that we designed and you helped us perfect. And this guy and his team put it all together, and then the rest of us made it make even more sense than that. And here's Jason, everybody.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pathfinder 2nd Edition preview portion of this banquet. We've got a lot of slides to go through, so I'm going to keep things moving. Hi, I am Jason Bullman. I'm the director of game design, the leader of a team that has been working on this game for multiple years now, and we are really excited to bring it to all of you. Pathfinder 2nd Edition, that's right. It is dropping on August 1st with a 640-page core rulebook. I apologize to your backs, to your backpacks, but we just couldn't make it any smaller. It just kept getting bigger. There was too much awesome stuff for us to put in. Now, there's an awful lot in this book for me to go through. So I'm not going to dwell too deeply on a lot of details, but I do want to show you guys a lot of spreads from this book as we page through it. I'm going to start out with chapter 1. This is the introduction. And you will notice we have the very first rule of play, just like in 1st edition Pathfinder, in 2nd edition Pathfinder. The very first rule of play is this game is yours. Do with it what you will. We love writing rules. We love telling you how you can make your game more awesome. But if those rules aren't working for your game, throw them out and play the way you want to play. That's what we believe in. That's what we want you to do. Thank you. Now, the rest of Chapter 1 has been entirely redesigned. Many of you gave us a lot of feedback in the playtest about some challenges with making playtest characters and all that sort of stuff. We took all that to heart and rewrote the entire chapter from Word 1. This chapter does contain all of the rules for creating a character. And as I walk through some of the other chapters, I'm going to explain how that works in second edition. The first thing you're going to do is pick an ancestry. This is step one of what we call the ABCs of character creation. Ancestry, background, and class. So the first thing you're going to do is pick an ancestry. Like, for example, Goblin, who might be munching on a pickle. For any of you who have watched us in Oblivion Oath, pickles are magic. That's right, pickles are magic. So it was important for us to make that evident in the Goblin entry. So the first thing you do is you pick your ancestry. Then you're going to go in and pick a heritage within that ancestry. That kind of is the way that your ancestry physically manifests itself. And then you start taking feats, which are your cultural representation of your ancestry. The next thing you're going to do is pick a background. I didn't pick a spread of backgrounds because they're long and there's not a good piece of art in the middle of it. But your backgrounds, there are 45 of them in the book. We almost doubled the number of backgrounds you have to choose from. So you can be anything from a miner to a blacksmith to a farmer to a fortune teller, whatever you can think of. We tried to give you a background that might represent it. And of course, in the future, we'll give you even more. But after that, it's time to pick the real meat of your character, the class, the most important part. And I just had to show off this piece of art because I absolutely love it. Amiri looks like she is ready to murder everyone in the room with this piece of art. So we learned an awful lot from the playtest about the classes, how they were working, what wasn't working, and we went through every single class, all 12 of them, with a fine-tooth comb to revise and expand them, to add more options, to build new feats, to give you more features to play with. Almost all of the classes have a major choice you make in determining what type of member of that class you are. The only exceptions being the fighter and the monk, because we wanted you to kind of build your own path with them. What kind of weapons, what kind of stances do you want to use? We wanted you to build that yourself. But for all the others, you kind of have some paths built into them that allow you to kind of customize your character and your choices. So, for example, the barbarian has various instincts they can choose, like fury. We changed the name Totem. That wasn't quite working for us, so we changed it to instinct. But let's go to the sorcerer. Sorcerer has a lot of bloodlines you can choose from. Now, for those of you who participated in the playtest, you would have seen a lot of our bloodlines. We had things like Abyssal and Infernal and Angelic. We added a few more, such as Hag and Undead. But one of my favorites was one of the ones that was already in there. That was the Abyssal Bloodline, and it had a spell called Gluttonous Bite that we just had to illustrate in the middle of the sorcerer. Yeah, don't get near that sorcerer. They bite. All of the classes also include sample builds to help you understand how to build a character that might fit into one of those archetypes to help you guide you on your way. All of the classes got longer from the playtest. For those of you who are familiar with what was there, they are even longer now. The classes themselves take up like the first 200 pages of the book, 180. So there's a lot of class options and class features to be found inside the book. Now, at the end of the classes chapter, we have a section on familiar and animal companions, but we also have archetypes. The core rulebook contains the archetypes for all 12 of the classes, allowing you to play a member of that class from another class. So if you're a bard and you want to be a champion, you can pick up the champion archetype and become part champion. It's a way for you to dabble in those abilities without losing your core character identity. Which was received very well in the playtest. These two pieces of art were just too awesome not to show off. I'm not sure how much you guys can read the text. No, it's a little washed out. Okay. So moving on. Next up, let's take a look at the skills chapter. Down here, let's see. Yeah, this is skills, right? Yeah. Okay. One of the things that we did in the skills chapter is that we unified all of the common uses up in the front of the chapter so that the rest of the chapter was cleaned up quite a bit. All the crafting rules and stuff like that applied to multiple skills, some of that came up to the front. Not crafting, but like things like knowledge and seeking and scribing scrolls and stuff, all that moved up to the front to clear up some of the other stuff. This is a picture of crafting, which I just kind of love the idea that Ezrin and Fumbus would dare work in a workshop together. Like, because you know Ezrin would not put up with that. He'd just be like, no, you need to get out. All right, after the skills chapter in the book, we're going to venture into the feats chapter. This has one of my favorite pieces of art in the whole book for the feat Underwater Marauder that Valeros apparently picked up. He's going to need a bigger boat. He's going to try and kill that thing, but I don't think he's going to be able to pull it off. Let's see. After that, we move on into the... So feats, by the way, this is the generic feats chapter, so this is general feats and skill feats. All characters get access to these as you go up in level. So, you know, as you build a character in second edition, you get feats from your ancestry, you get feats from your class. You also get feats for your skills and general feats. This allows everybody to kind of specialize in the way that you imagine your character. That was one of our prime driving goals for second edition, was to make sure that you could build the character you envisioned. We didn't want to put a lot of lock and gates in your way. We wanted to make sure that you could build your way to the character that you are seeing. Next up, we've got equipment. That's a critical part of that. We've got Amiri here buying a sword. The equipment chapter goes through armor and weapons and stuff like that, and there is some dynamite new stuff in there, including a suit of armor that everyone can wear. Because it's just explorer's clothing, but you can put armor runes and magic on it. Which, while it doesn't give you an armor bonus itself, you can then get some of those bonuses, even if you're a wizard. So there's a lot of fun stuff to be found in the equipment chapter. This is all the basic equipment. We also added some things like some basic alchemy and magic items in there, so that you had a one-stop place to shop to get all the things to build your first level character. So next up in the book is the spells chapter. And you'll notice I'm kind of going through this really quickly because the book is titanic. If I went slowly, we would literally be here till 2 a.m. So, and I've been told to keep it moving. So let's jump into spells. And this is a spell called Dinosaur Form. Oh. Oh, I see. How do I maximize it, Mona? Everyone can see your desktop. I'm so terribly sorry.
No, that's quite all right. Hey, everybody, look at all my files.
Hey! So dinosaurs, let me tell you a little anecdote about the playtest. One of the things that we had in the playtest forums was a thread called Change One Letter in a Spell. And one of my favorite ones was someone taking the dinosaur form spell and changing it to Dinosaur Fort. Which was a high level spell that just summoned a fortress of dinosaurs, I guess? I'm going to be honest, it was in the book until like the 11th and a half hour. We actually wrote it. It allowed you to conjure a fort made of dinosaur bones and 4 T-Rexes. It was like a 10th level primal spell, and it was just insane. It was like we didn't know what you would ever do it with it, but it'll appear at some point in time in a future book. It didn't quite make it in the core. I'm sorry. Like I said, I couldn't make the book any bigger. Mona was starting to yell at me. All right. That's a mess up there. That you got a dragon problem, turn into a dinosaur. All right. As Eric mentioned, we also have a chapter in the book now that follows up the spells chapter that talks about Galarian. And I couldn't help showing off this particular spread that also features the Eye of Terror, kind of, or Isle of Dread. Yeah, sorry, Eye of Dread. Yeah, I got it. It's written real small. The Eye of Dread, which is kind of the new region in the central part of our world that's had some problems as of late. I won't say any more spoilers. So after that, we move into the play chapter describing how you play Pathfinder 2nd Edition. I hope many of you have had a chance to play it here at the show. If you have not, please come to the Delves. We will give you a sample of the game. If you are more interested in just watching, there'll be Glass Cannon tomorrow. There's the Oblivion Oath stream. There's lots of ways for you to get a chance to take a look at the game. So in the play chapter, we got a lot of rules, including new rules for death and dying that I'm sure many of you are very interested in. It was a very contentious part of the play test. So Fumbus is going to test them out for us. He's taken a lot of arrows. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. I feel like a monster now. Nice. All right. So death and dying works much like it did at the very end of the playtest with people falling into dying. When you come back, you get the wounded condition. If you keep going back down to dying, you die faster and faster, which can eventually end in your death. So yo-yoing is really bad in second edition. But we got rid of the negative numbers because everybody hated those. All right, where am I at? After the play chapter, which is expansive and covers all the different modes of play, covers all your conditions, covers all the different systems for running a game, we then go into the game mastering chapter, which features a lot of really great art pieces. This one happens to feature a particularly nasty custer I'll be talking about a little bit more later. But the game mastering chapter is where you're going to find all your hazards. It's going to have all of your encounter building rules, all of your rules for traps, XP, all those things to make a GM's life easier. And last but not least, after game mastering, we're going to get into magic items. The Eye of Robes makes an appearance, as does your Wayfinder. A robe of eyes. It's not my year, Mona. I don't know what's going on. It's cursed. Eye of robes. Now I'm going to stat that up for the next book. There's a really cool item on this page called the vial of the first lie, I think it is. What it is it contains the whisper from the astral plane of the first lie ever told. And you can open it up to basically tell an unbeatable lie. The DC is like 47 or something to beat. So if you really want to walk up to the king and be like, I'm the king now, open up the vial. And he's like, you are the king. So that is the Pathfinder Core Rulebook. It is 640 pages of just kind of as much awesome as we could possibly pack into it. I want to give you guys a whole bunch more examples, but I'm going to do that a little bit later. First, I'm going to go and take a look at the bestiary, which I happen to have the first print copy right here. We didn't quite get the core in time, but we got the bestiary, and let me tell you, this thing is a beauty. 400 pages, more than 400 monsters, 360 pages, so for those of you who are counting, between the core rulebook and the first bestiary, that's an even 1,000 pages. Sorry, Will. I am sorry. I am desperately sorry to everyone in the warehouse who has to ship those books. I'm sorry. I'm not that sorry. All right. So in this book, we have, and I'm going to go these pretty rapid fire because I think it's pretty washed out and you can't get too much in spoilers, but the art is incredibly awesome in here. We've got the good. You've got angels. Here, I think it's the Belise. Can't read the other one. Astral Diva. Yeah, sure, absolutely. We've got the good. We've, of course, got the bad. Here are the Vrock, my personal favorite demon, and the Glabrezu, who is apparently cursing his tiny, tiny hands. Every time I see that art, I'm just like, why are they so small? So that was we had the good, the bad, the ugly. As it turns out, flesh warps are really gross. That drider is not exactly pretty. It's just like, is that a bunch of spider tumors on your back? Yes, it is. We also have, naturally we have low-level monsters like zombies. Although I have to admit, this has one of my favorite bits in the entire book. That giant corpse zombie on the right has an ability called throw corpse. which allows them to pick up smaller zombies and throw them at you. And if they don't die, they just get back up, and now you have to fight them. It's like they get a free move action for being thrown at you. This is also one of our examples of a templated monster. We haven't talked a lot about the bestiary, and you guys haven't seen a lot of it, so I have a little bit more detail on that. These templates have a bunch of interesting ways that you can customize the monsters. Like zombies, for example, have a thing in there where you can just give them the unkillable thing, where they gain huge resistance to damage, but a huge vulnerability to crits. So if you stab them in the head, they go down easy. But otherwise, they're really hard to kill. So we have low-level threats. We also, of course, have high-level threats, like dragons. This is a pretty nasty white dragon. All of the good and evil dragons are in the book. We know the good dragons weren't in the playtest document, but they are in the bestiary. We also, of course, have classic monsters, like the Atiyug and Owlbear. One of our big design imperatives for the monsters was to make sure that the monsters had cool, evocative abilities. The owlbear has an ability to screech as it charges you, causing everyone to get afraid. And then once it knocks you down, it can rip and rip out your guts to go feed to its young. Because it's an owl, right? I mean... But it's not just all classic monsters. We have new monsters, too. And although the nightmares on this spread, the other monster on this spread is particularly new and horrifying. It's like some sort of nightmare sloth. For those of you who think sloths are cute and adorable, this guy is not. We, of course, have my favorite monster in the entire game. The Lich makes an appearance. The Lich also is one of those monsters with a bunch of cool customizable abilities. You always wanted a Lich that instead of paralyzing people just dealt an aura of cold and dealt cold damage on touch and all that sort of thing. That's an option now. You can take away some of its other abilities and give it an aura that just causes everyone to be doomed while you're near it. If you guys remember the doomed condition, it just doomed. That's right. Makes you closer and closer to death. And, of course, the monster book wouldn't be complete without its biggest, most powerful monster, Tree Razor. This huge demon is our big level 25 monster in the book. He has a plus 5 axe. We had some people asking if weapons only went to plus 3. His certainly goes higher. But good luck getting it from him. He has turned all the way to 11. That is true. All right, so that is the bestiary. That is 360 pages. Both of these books are going to be coming out on August 1st, along with a mountain of accessories. You've got a GM screen. We've got character sheets. We've got initiative tracker. We have status cards. We have a pack of character sheets. We have a whole bunch of things that Will is staring at me with baleful intent because he has to find a way to ship them all. Sorry. Yeah, all right. I know you do. All right. I also wrote the first adventure. We haven't talked about this almost at all. It is called The Fall of Plaguestone. This 64-page standalone adventure drops the same time as the book. I wrote it. It comes out with a double-sided flip mat and has a tie-in with our friends at Dwarven Forge to buy an entire Dwarven Forge setup of one of the main dungeons in the event. It drops on August 1st. It is the story, I tried to frame it as it's not the story that about your adventurers, it's the story about how your adventurers got together as a group. That's what it's framed as. It's there to be your first introduction to the game. And I do want to show you one spread of it, showing the poor town of Etrin's Folly, which has the unfortunate nickname of Plaguestone. It is a town surrounded by turnip fields. So I decided that the art should feature turnips heavily. All right. So we've been talking an awful lot about the books that we've announced. Core rulebook, player's handbook. Sorry, core rulebook. Jesus, I'm really off my game today. Core rulebook, the bestiary, Fall of Plaguestone, Lost Omen World's Guide. We haven't talked about anything in the future. We have talked about nothing beyond that. Until today, I am happy to announce the Game Mastery Guide for 2nd Edition. It will be dropping in winter of this year. If you are looking for rules on chases, rules for duels, rules for victory points, a mountain of sample NPCs to use, rules for generating spells, rules for creating magic items, and rules for creating monsters, they will all be in this book. This will be the essential book for the GM who wants to create and customize their game and to add more depth and complexity to their rule system. And we are going to be excited to drop that sometime in winter this year. Now, I played it a little light on spoilers because I have something special in mind for all of you. And all the employees have these. Don't quite hand them out just yet. But you guys are our most devoted fans. You are here at PaizoCon. You are here at the banquet. You are here listening to me screw up titles. And you deserve to go away with a little something. So, out there, in the hands of our employees, they all have index cards with direct from the game spoilers. I have cut out rules components from all over the core rulebook. There are 100 of them in total. There are 4 total sets spread out through the room. So there's 400 cards, so each card has 4 copies. So yours isn't quite unique, but it's the best I could do with all of you. There's too many of you for me to cut everything. So all of these cards are numbered, 1 to 100, and they are all labeled under the hashtag #MyPathfinderSpoiler. So all of you can take these cards, spread them, tell your friends about them, use them, post them online, and hopefully, between all of you, you can collect all 100 spoilers. Now, two little things. One, some of the low cards are really basic concepts. They're not the most exciting spoilers, but they're there to set the stage so that you can understand all of the spoilers if you look at them as a whole. Two, card number 77 is my favorite. And three...
69.
Nope. Not going there. And three, I'm going to be at UK Games Expo next week, and I'm going to be on a little bit of vacation, but if by the time I get back, there's a message board thread on Paizo with the text from all 100 spoilers, I will drop a huge info dump of additional spoilers. But that is up to all of you to make it happen. So at that point, I would like everybody at your tables to hand out your spoiler cards to everybody. If there are people who do not get one because there are not enough at the table, come see me after the banquet near the far door there on the end, and I have some extras. And on that, we're going to go over to Owen.
Hi, everybody. So I have the unwelcome task of trying to maintain your attention while you have 100 spoilers to look at, get excited about, take pictures of, and try and put online. So obviously, you would normally expect me to be here wearing my hat as the Starfinder design lead, but you'll notice this says Owen Casey Stevens, third-party publisher, because I'm not standing here as a member of Paizo right at the moment. I'm standing here wearing one of my third-party publisher hats, which I literally got made and left in my room, which is why I'm not wearing it right now. But conceptually speaking, imagine me changing hats. Before I actually make that change, I do want to say, as a member of Paizo, Paizo loves our third-party publishers. We love all of our third-party publishers. We think that a vibrant, interesting, exciting, varied, and even crazy third-party market is good for the game, it's good for the players, and it's good for us. The only way we get to play things from this game that we don't know about way before they get published is if you make them. In one of the games I'm playing right now, we had a Lechi Luchador as one of the players in an office game. And we killed him. Okay, Ron totally killed him. And Ron says that it wasn't on purpose and it looked really innocent at the time, but he's a lawyer, so who knows. So having talked about how important that is to us, I am now switching hats because I want to talk to you a little bit about what it's going to look like to be Pathfinder compatible from the second edition era forward. It's not on this little card, but one of the first things I want to say is the first edition Pathfinder compatible license and logo isn't going anywhere. We are not ending your ability to make first edition Pathfinder compatible content for third-party publishers. We love that game too. We're still playing it. And for heaven's sakes, we're still selling the pocket editions and everything else until we run out. And pawns and dice and flip mats. And it would be, if we tried to shut that down, that's the sort of thing that might cause another company to come along and make a better version of that game and then try and sell it out from under us. So we won't do that. So there will be a Pathfinder compatible license for second edition. Early access to it will be given to third-party publishers who qualify. This is very similar to what we did with Starfinder. We would like on day one for us to have some stuff to play that we've never seen before. And the only way we can do that is if you make it, and the only way if you make it is if the ones that have proven they can already do stuff get the rules. So to qualify, a publisher must sell digital or physical products either on paizo.com or physical products through Alliance Game Distributors, because if you've managed to get a physical product into Alliance, we applaud you. We know how hard that is. Please, by all means, let us know that you want to make more. Early access publishers will receive the rules, files, and special Pathfinder symbol font starting June 14th. When I talk about the symbol font, we have made a font to indicate if something is one actions, two actions, three actions, reactions. We will give it to you for use. You don't have to make your own. We don't want 47 different ways to indicate that there are two actions. That would be confusing, and in case I hadn't mentioned it, we want to play with this stuff. So the least confusing it is, the better. If you are interested as a qualifying publisher, you should contact licensing at paizo.com, and we will then be able to get that material to you so that you can make the awesome stuff you make so that we can play it with the awesome stuff we make. We are really excited to see what everyone does with these rules that isn't us. No one at Paizo is ever actually going to make an eye of robes. Yes, I am. But a third-party publisher could sell the heck out of that. All right, so I know what you're all wondering now. You're all sitting there and you're all thinking to yourself, surely Eric Mona doesn't have yet another picture of himself that we can put up there when we call him up to the screen. And you would, of course, be wrong. So I'll now turn things over to our publisher, Eric Mona.
Okay, so we are very, very, very near the end of the program here. So to recap, if you take away nothing else tonight, the bugbear ancestry is coming in the player's handbook. Okay, one point I would like to make, at least from where I'm sitting up here, the combination of the lights and some of the AV stuff tonight, it's not super clear. Some of these illustrations are a little bit blurry. Some of the text is very hard to read. That's certainly not the intent. We're not trying to block anything out. The folks who are watching on the stream have a native copy of my PowerPoint, errors and all, that they're going through that I assume will be archived somewhere. And so if you're like, that stuff looks really cool, I kind of want to read it, that's probably your best bet to do so. So we'll make it very clear how you can do that. I got to meet Lovecraft in this picture, everyone. That was pretty cool. Okay, so that's it. That we're pretty much done. I have two other quick announcements that I'd like to make. Immediately following this banquet, there are two things you could do. I guess there's four. You could go to the bar, you could go to sleep. But who wants to do that when you can go to the Grimmer Space launch party? That is happening in Cascade 13 pretty much immediately after this. This is our good friends from the Iron GM group. They're putting out Grimmer Space, which is a dark horror version setting for Starfinder that works just alongside our setting as well, if you'd like. And it's pretty sweet. And they've got a bunch of cool stuff going on upstairs in Cascade 13. Or perhaps you're Well, you're probably a giant Paizo nerd. Thank you. And maybe you know even more about this than I do. We've got a trivia contest coming up. John Compton and a gang of insane people have put together what I hope is a challenging trivia contest. And the winning table will get a gift certificate to Paizo.com. So if you think you can outsmart some of your fellow Paizo fiends, stick around. And John always has a wonderfully fun and challenging trivia contest. And like I said many times, we already hired Mark Moreland, so he can't beat you. And that's it. Thank you guys all for your attention. Thank you for coming to PaizoCon. There is still plenty of time to get in that Pathfinder 2nd Edition delve. There's plenty of time for more, you know, panels and discussions. We started, Liz Quartz and Tim Nightingale started PaizoCon in the basement of a La Quinta Inn, and there were as many Paizo employees as there were attendees pretty much on site. And even though the convention has grown significantly since then, it's really important to Paizo and all the Paizo staff that we maintain that sense of sort of approachability, and we're all gamers and we're all here to hang out. So let's hang out, and we'll see you guys throughout the rest of the weekend. Hopefully we'll see you next year. Thank you so much for coming to PaizoCon, everybody. That's it. Goodbye.